Okay, the fire marshal.
So the fire marshal said, the open stairwell. Absolutely not. The reason we wanted the open staircase is so that this is going to be a large building, and we're going to accommodate as many as 3,000 to 5,000 students in a day. And there will be hundreds of people using that building. And you put the staircase in front where it's visible, and they'll use it, and put the elevators back so they have to walk past the stairs to use the elevators. This way, you will be able to move large numbers of people between floors efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
And you want it visible. Mm-hmm. And if it's inside...
You have to go through some doorway, open some door, fire doors or whatever to go up. You're not going to use it. You're not going to see it.
True.
You're going to go... You're
so the fire marshal said it's a chimney, and if there's a fire... it's not a safe escape route for people. So the compromise was then, okay, when you enter the lobby to the library, we wanted it completely open to the card catalog, now where the computer catalog is, and the main reference area, so you can see the reference desk as you come into the building.
Uh-huh. And you can do a beeline right for it.
We didn't want a wall there, but they said for fire purposes you have to have a wall there. And okay, you can have the doors propped open, but the doors are on a fused link.
Are they?
Those doors are on fused links. And the fused link means if it gets hot, it's soft lead or something like this, the doors will automatically fall closed.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they'll swing shut.
That's fascinating. I had no idea.
If they get hot enough, they will swing shut. So you have a protected exit for people to exit the building. And at the circulation desk, which we also, you know, we wanted open, there are fire
doors
up above on a chain. They would, and they are also on a fused link. And if they become hot,
they also will drop.
Those things will drop right down to the top of the counters at the circulation desk. So that...
I'll have to notice next time I walk around the library and see if I notice those things.
That's special.
On the fire doors. So those are the features that allowed you to have that...
Allowed us to have the open stairwell.
Well, the open stairwell we and the open area into the reference department and over to circulation... But the open stairwell, I would imagine the emergency stairwells on the east side and the west side of the building also were a compromise factor also, weren't they?
Yes, they had to be installed. We didn't necessarily want them, but they had to for fire, for emergency escape reasons, and it's certainly reasonable. And it's understood that you could put alarms on them so that people would not use them.
So when Rolf... Ellsworth came in and came up with this fantastic new floor plan, kind of laid it out for you. After that, it was a pretty streamlined process.
Yes,
as far
he
as
said you can have a general reference desk on the main floor and then still bring your subject divisions from the old building along, which we did. And his advice was, so you have transportation... Vertical transportation right in the center of the building. He said it's the most efficient place for people to move from floor to floor. And he said, then you put offices and workstations of your library staff hugging the core. Because your staff walks from one floor to the other and department to the other. And if you have them near to the transportation, they will save time and energy to move from one part of the building to the other. He said, do not put office staff out on the peripheries of the several floors because it's least efficient in use of their time. And furthermore, his overall plan was, so you have staff people in the central core near to transportation, and then you have book stacks on all of the floors next. And then reader stations... and reader areas on the peripheries.
Next to the
and the reason is that people using libraries, they come sometimes they want just to get a book. So they take the elevator and they go to the third floor and they get a book out of the stacks and go back. You don't want the books out on the peripheries and the reader areas in the middle, because if someone is just coming to get a book, they'll have to go right through where people are studying, mm-hmm. concentrating, want mm-hmm. quiet areas. They have to go right through them out to the edge to pick up a book, and then they walk back through the area where people are studying and disturbing everybody. Mm-hmm. So this is his overall plan. Transportation and staff in the center, books, and then readers, people on the peripheries.
Well, I guess for the most part, the library has pretty much maintained that. However, there are a few things that are changing, yes, this one area in particular.
Yes.
But that'll change.
And he talked to the... Ellsworth is a very eloquent and a very friendly and just a good speaker. He was intelligent and intellectual, and the faculty liked him. And he sold them the plan for the library building, and they just bought it, and it was just a rose garden after that. No problems. Faculty just loved it.
I've seen his name many times in the archives collection. Mm-hmm. I've seen his name many times in that. So then after that, it was just a matter of hammering out some of the details about what the interior was going to look like, and mm-hmm. where service desks were going to be, and where workstations were going to be, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Did you plan ahead at that stage for future computer installation?
Yes, we were mindful of hard wiring
for computers, and more electrical loads, and
we were very
such.
Mindful of that. And in the planning, that's why they had to drop ceilings. One of the reasons, where you can run conduits of any kind in these drop ceilings. It's, you know, it's several feet between the ceiling and the floor above it.
Mm.
And the columns in this building are in 24-foot centers. The advice always was, since libraries have bookshelves that are 3 feet long, and all kinds of reasons that 3 feet is a good measure, if you have your columns, the architects call them the bays,
mm-hmm.
On 24-foot centers, everything divisible by three, you will have a more efficient use of the
sure.
spaces. And every column has a duct buried in it for electricity, electric lines, and for... there's another one that was thought to be usable. Is it for the telephones? Are your telephones in the walls? Or
actually, no.
Lines?
Lately, when they do wiring for telephones, for coaxial, for hard wiring of computers, any of that sort of thing, it's usually just see it right out here on the walls.
Uh-huh.
I have never seen them sink anything into one of those pillars,
uh-huh.
which is rather unfortunate. I don't know what other wiring would go in there.
But we did talk about the fact that there will be a great need for electricity, for electric lines and for telephone and communication lines in the new building,
yep.
and that was incorporated in the plans.
That was smart thinking, because I've heard horror stories about buildings that weren't designed to accept.
Oh, and the other thing was modular. So the plan is you can just move walls anywhere.
Sure.
Anywhere.
Whose idea was that? Was that Ellsworth, or was that somebody else's?
I think it was probably the architect.
Was it?
Oh, and woodwork everywhere. The paneling in the lobby areas of the five floors of this building.
Yeah.
Al Dennis did all of this planning, and he specified those wood panels.
Beautiful
for those. He said that, and so we were planning furniture for the building. And at first we were told by the campus business affairs office and by the Department of Finance, you'll take your own old furniture with you to the new building. And one day when Al Dennis from the State Division of Architecture and the Dean for Buildings was in our group with us, the new library building planners, we were discussing the furniture for the new building. And Beverly Johnson,
mm-hmm.
Wife of former Vice President Albert Johnson, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she was his wife then.
That was his first wife,
his
yes.
His first
uh-huh.
wife, Beverly, was on our library staff. And Beverly was a... what shall I say? Precocious? aggressive person. And they were discussing the furniture, and Al said, well, you should have wood with a kind of a chocolatey brown colored finish. And so somebody said, how will we be sure to have the same colors are going to be? He says, it's perfectly all right if there's a kind of a range. He said it would be boring and monotonous if you had all one exact color of furniture, wood, in your building. So he said you have a harmony of several shades, and it's perfectly all right. So Beverly said all of a sudden, well, here we are going into a brand new building, and this is going to be the showpiece of the campus, and we have to drag this old furniture built by Prison Industries along with us. And she said, I think we should tell the Department of Finance we want all new furniture in the new library building. And she went into a very emotional and charged up plea.
And they bought it.
They bought it. So from then on, we planned brand new furniture. And we chucked all that old furniture. You see it all over campus now in laboratories and in classrooms and auditoriums and everywhere.
Some of it has worked its way back into the building, unfortunately, but I know which ones you're talking about, yeah.
It was ugly furniture. They had birch-colored furniture, and they had these funny, narrow tables. For some reason or other, they had tables that were about 20 inches across.
And also very long, too.
Long, narrow tables.
I've seen them. We had some in our office downstairs all the time.
So from that time on, we planned new furniture, and we still had to contract with the
state prison industries.
And we made two trips up to Chino, to the place where they build it. And they showed us all of the different models of furniture they make, and they imitate any commercial style furniture. So this furniture around here is of good quality, and they imitate exactly what we specified. And we went through catalogs of private furniture manufacturers and told them what we wanted. They
built
it.
That must have been quite a lot. That's an amazing amount of work. Number one, planning the building.
Oh, yeah.
And number two, figuring out what furniture everybody's going to need in the new building. Everybody had to decide what it was they needed for their office or their workstation. Figuring out the built-in workstation modules, counters that don't move.
We asked one librarian to be in charge of all of this planning and coordinating of the furniture selection design first, and that was Lester Smith, who was the head of the humanities division in the old library. He was the head reference librarian there. He left us, you know, and went off to Northern Illinois University, where he became the library director, and I think he's retired back to San Diego now. I haven't seen him, but I think he's back. Anyhow, Lester was an art major, and he was very particular and very fussy and did a very good job. He was very intent on good design. He said, we don't want blocky furniture. And some people have this just heavy blocky chairs in libraries, you know those?
Yes, No, easy to trip over. Yeah, you just catch your toe on them as you're walking by. Yeah,
He wanted the thin metal legs. You want elegant, you know, not blocky, heavy-looking stuff. So he had a lot to do with this furniture that's in here. And then eventually, we hired Dale Marriott. Who
to take over the
completed the job of planning all this furniture, placing the orders for it, and making the specifications of exactly what was wanted, what colors, and...
Daryl Marriott.
Numbers, yeah. His wife was head of circulation department in the library in those days.
Who was in charge of organizing the move?
He was.
He was, too. Okay.
Dale, and he had... We hired somebody else as an assistant to him. I don't remember who it is now.
So how did that move go? How long did it take you?
Beautifully. They hired a moving contractor. It might have been Mayflower, but I can't recall.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You didn't have each faculty member and each student check out 15 books and... and check them back in at the new building.
No, we talked about that, but decided that it really wouldn't work because the collection by this time was probably 400,000 volumes. And everything was very carefully organized, and Dale Marriott, they put stickers on the floors in the new building everywhere that matched the old library, where everything was to go. And they devised some special system for taking a whole shelf of books, and they put them in the vans, moving vans. They had the big moving vans and loaded the trucks up and brought them over to the new library building.
Those big semis, huh? But just roll a whole unit of shelving in there full of books into the truck, and then
I think it only took about, at the most, 2 weeks.
That's not bad. Did library services go on as usual?
Yes.
For the most part, of course, unless, of course, a book was in transit.
Oh. I don't think we closed the library to service. I can't remember.
You know, I didn't do my homework as far as this goes, as far as the opening of the new building and so forth. I have read it just recently, but I have forgotten.
We tried to get maximum publicity for it, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And so we arranged with the president of the Associated Students to move the first book. So he went to the old library, and we gave him that Bible, which was the first book ever added to this library back in 1898. And he personally carried it to the new building with the photographers taking pictures and so on. So we did a kind of a PR job of that.
But now the official opening of the library, I think it was the opening, not the dedication, had Greg Hennessy cutting the ribbon. Why was Greg Hennessy the one that did that? Greg Hennessy eventually moved on to the San Diego Historical Society.
I think he might have been the president of the Library Staff Association,
okay.
Something like that.
All right. Tell me about...
He cut the ribbon?
Well, he did something. He did something like that. He cut the ribbon, or he did some kind of a ceremonial little thing there at the opening of the library.
Must have been.
Not the
Malcolm
dedication.
Love must have been there. Isn't that funny? I can't remember.
He had a separate opening, and he had another dedication.
He had a dedication on campus... they used to have one day every year in the spring, they had open house on campus where they invited the community to come along. And so we had the formal so-called dedication of the library building on that. It was on a Sunday, and Irving Stone was our speaker.
Oh, really?
Yes. We Friends of the Library sponsored it, and we thought we were going to get a big crowd, and we held it out in the open-air theater down there.
Uh-huh.
And only a handful of people showed up.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
We were very disappointed because here we got this famous writer from Beverly Hills, Irving Stone, who has written all those marvelous books. Yeah. Van Gogh and Michelangelo and all kinds of famed people. And here we had this big powerhouse, and I don't think we had 50 people in that great big open-air theater out there.
Oh,
it could have been 80.
That's unfortunate.
Just the friends of the library showed up. Not many of them.
Was President Love very interested and involved in the planning of this building?
He was always in the background and was supportive. He didn't seem to take an active role in it. I can tell you at one point, though, it became pleasantly clear that he was backing the library. He relied on his deans to do things, and as I said, Dean Holmes did the coordinating on the library building, and he turned it over to him. But at one point, we were discussing we need to have carpeting in the new library. We want carpeting. And the physical plant people were all opposed to it, the custodians, the janitors, because they have a formula also that drives their budget for the custodians, and for every number of square feet of floor space in a building, the formula provides one custodian in the budget.
It used to. Huh?
And the Department of Finance, in devising these formulas, said that keeping a vinyl floor or a tile floor clean is more difficult because you have to mop it every month or every week or something like this and so on to keep it clean. But if you have carpeting, you vacuum it, and it's easier to keep clean. Therefore, the formula is less rich. You need fewer custodians,
right.
And so the formula is 20,000 square feet per custodian instead of 16,000.
For some reason, I thought that they would have been complaining because it would have required more labor instead of less.
It would have meant fewer custodians had jobs to work in the library,
yes.
And so they were absolutely against it, and they loudly protested that they didn't want carpeting. But the librarians in our library committee, our staff committee group, had really wanted strongly to have carpeting, and we did some research into the literature and prepared a document of how important it was. And we gave it to the executive dean. And so they decided that the only way this could be handled was to bring President Love into the matter, because the custodians were headed by Mr. Hartigan, who was the business manager. These days he's called Vice President for Business Affairs.
Uh-huh.
And Hartigan was on their side, not the library's. So we arranged this little meeting in Dr. Love's conference room, just outside Dr. Love's office, the President's office. And President Love came in smiling in his benign and pleasant, handsome way. And so he said, well, what's the problem here? And he said, now, Mr. Hartigan, will you explain what your wishes are about having carpeting in the new library building? And he told about how his custodians were all against it, and because the formula would be eroded, and we fear if there's one erosion of our formula that they get their foot in the door, and then we will lose more positions in the future, you know, that blah, bureaucratic story. So then Dr. Love turned to me and he said, Dr. Kinney, what do you think about having carpeting in the building? So I told him, it is sets an atmosphere in the library of a place that's for quiet and for study,
mm-hmm.
and research. And that the, what's the other reason? Not only it's quiet, but it's aesthetically more pleasing.
It's aesthetically richer.
And most libraries these days across the country have carpeting in them.
Were you talking about carpeting throughout the library, in the stack areas as well?
We didn't get to that detail then. That came a little later, and later they decided that in stack areas they didn't need the carpeting. And so I guess the custodians half won, and we half won.
Yeah, I was going to say it was kind of a compromise then.
We did get it on the whole first floor, remember? It's all carpeted.
Yeah, that's right.
The full floor. Because we said that was going to be mostly reader stations and not stack area. But they said, why do you need carpeting? It's going to be covered with book stacks. Perhaps. With reason. And so Dr. Love said, and he smiled, and he said, I think so too.
And that was it.
And that was the end. The meeting was over. And they just looked glum. Hartigan and what's his name? Hannigan.
He
used to be head of the custodians.
Callahan.
Tim Hallahan.
I don't know that.
They just look glum. But that's all it took. Love said, I think so too.
Hmm.
So we got the carpeting.
What was the original color scheme and original decor in this? Well, we know the furniture, but what was it originally like? Was the carpet orange? This is a trivial question, but I kind of want to have a visual picture of what it was like.
It was orange carpet. A model pattern that's essentially orange. It has some red and orange and brown woven into it. It's about three colors.
Uh-huh.
And it's still on the first floor down there.
Yes, I seem to have it down there. There are periodical stacks over much of it, so a lot
the
of
the lobby is the new
well
blue carpeting,
of, yeah.
But the old is still that kind of sort of an
that's
orange-ish.
The only part that I guess survived fairly well. A lot of it, you know, obviously an awful lot of foot traffic goes over that carpet, so it wears out after a couple of years.
Yeah. Well, and the Department of Finance itself had a study that showed that carpeting is cheaper. And it does have to be replaced, and they had studies on how long it will last. It's something like 15 years, they estimate. I don't remember exactly, but something on that order. This is industrial-grade carpeting, and that it does need to be replaced, but in the long run, it's cheaper than the tile.
I think the last installation of carpet in this building was not a good choice. I think they probably didn't choose a good grade of carpet.
I don't think it's as... strong.
I don't think it's strong. I think it needs to be replaced already, and it's only, 5 or 8 years old. It's very new carpet.
I did tell you about that carpeting in the lobby?
Yeah, that awful stuff there that's right, that is there right now, that blue that's supposed to be clean is very dirty.
We were already in the building. I found out. Oh, we did have that swatch of carpeting put in the main entry lobby, the middle of the whole floor. That's
right.
A nice big swatch of carpet. And it didn't wear well, and it was beginning to look pretty ugly. Only a few years after we were in the building, and I don't think it was as good a quality or something, or else it just got much heavier use. You know, there are literally thousands of people walk over it every day. And we discovered that the physical plant people We had put in a request to replace that carpeting. It was simply ugly and in rags. And we found out accidentally through a physical plant guy that they had decided that they were going to replace that carpeting
with
not stucco. What do you call that?
Huh? You mean linoleum?
No, the stucco.
Stucco.
Not stucco. Which you put on floor, and you grind it off. And it's an Italian process, you know.
Terrazzo. Tile.
Terrazzo. Terrazzo. That's terrazzo. What they call it, isn't it? Terrazzo.
Well, terrazzo is what you have elsewhere in the building. Don't you have terrazzo elsewhere?
Yes, in some places.
It's like a composite.
Yes.
Rock. Rock, marble.
And ground off and shined.
Right.
Shined.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's around the edges.
It's not a slab of stone, but it's a composite of stuff, which is.
They were going to
marble.
Put a terrazzo. That's right. They were going to replace that carpet with terrazzo.
Noisy.
And they were going to put a brass plaque of San Diego State University's, the Great Seal, the seal,
seal
of San Diego State University.
Something about this big around?
A great big round one in the middle of that floor. And they asked, somebody finally came and asked me just where we wanted that Great Seal located in the new terrazzo that they were going to put in the lobby.
Oops, and that's the first you learned about.
And boy, I hit the ceiling. And I talked to my staff. And everyone was violently opposed to it. We want carpeting in there. So I went straight to the administration. I don't recall now whether it was... I don't know who was vice president for academic affairs. Was it still Dr. Watson? Maybe. But I went straight to them immediately. And they stopped it. They said, no. Put carpeting in there again.
Mm-hmm. Boy, those physical plant people were really trying to sneak things by you, weren't they?
It was Bill Erickson.
Oh, was it?
well,
nowadays
it would
be more, I don't know that.
See, it'd be more efficient, you know? You don't have to clean it all the time and all that blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But we said aesthetically it's bad for the main entrance to the library building. We want it to be quiet and reserved and aesthetically pleasing.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily elegant.
Nowadays, with improvement in materials, you know, new technological advances in materials, that maybe they could come up with some kind of a compromise. You know, there's all these there are all kinds of wonderful new rubberized floor coverings with different mm-hmm. colors that wear really well in the quiet.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe something like that would be a good compromise. In fact, that carpet wears out so quickly, I can see something like that.
The other thing we were afraid of is they would put the seal in there. Pretty soon people would be afraid to walk across it.
Sure. Yeah, nobody wants to walk.
You're not supposed to walk on the seal of the university. Yeah? The sacrilege, blasphemy.
Uh-huh. Nobody likes to walk on seals. We always avoid them.
We thought that was the craziest idea. Just crazy.
Well, so okay. So going back to that first question that led through this discussion of the carpeting was about President Love.
I had we can thank him.
We can thank President Love for the carpeting.
Absolutely.
The library. He rarely ever set foot in a library, I understand.
That's true.
He was not a library person.
Oh, I hate to tell you, I'm so embarrassed. I guess obtuse is the proper word to describe me sometimes. Not long after I was head librarian, my office was just right off the social science reference desk. It's just my secretary was off to the side, and you didn't go through. People walked right in my office from the library.